This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Spring 2017 is tromping down the runways at New York's Fashion Week. So far, a few wetsuit-looking numbers from Hood by Air, but not a burkini in sight. The distinction between the two is a new wrinkle in a long history of legislation, custom, and social norms when it comes to what women wear. Late last month, France's highest court struck down a prohibition against burkinis in one of the 30 seaside towns which forbade the full-body covering favored by Muslim women. Proponents argue the ban increases security and defends secularism in light of the attack in nearby Nice. Opponents claim it is straight-up Islamophobia. Deirdre Clementi from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, studies American culture, fashion, and clothing. She says it is not the first time the law has stepped in to regulate how women dress on the beach. And Deirdre, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So as someone who has a long view of fashion, I'm curious about your reaction when you first heard about the burkini ban.
At first, I thought it was somewhat ironic that the French, who, of course, many attribute as being the, you know, impetus of so many fashion styles, were regulating clothing. And then I started to think about it on a more intellectual level and realized that, you know, this was part of a long history of social institutions regulating how women dress. And this is the latest in our way to regulate women's appearances and their sexuality.
Now, we've all seen pictures of these, you know, the blousy tops and pantaloons and stockings even that Victorian-era women wore on the beach. So when did the smaller, more flexible and, may I say, less drown-encouraging swimsuits emerge?
Easier to dry, of course. Well, I think when you talk about the history of swimsuits, you really have to talk about the history of synthetic fibers and the rise of things such as elastic and the perfection of materials such as rubber, because so many of those tighter, more body-conscious swimsuits were directly attributable to these synthetic fibers. So you really start to see them come about in the 1930s when women, it's much more acceptable for women to wear show their legs, wear shorts, for example, came to the fore in the late 1930s for many young women. And by the time you hit the 40s, 50s, 60s, you see them start to shrink. And then, of course, with the arrival of the bikini in the late 1950s, popularized in the 1960s, we're really talking a different genre than the women of the Victorian era.
Well, so in the 1930s, when women were showing their legs and shoulders, male swimsuits also became skimpier. They were no longer covering their chests in those kind of singlets. Were they looked upon in the same way?
Well, not really, because, of course, at stake is the idea of controlling women's public appearances and controlling the manifestation of their sexuality in their clothes. It's often said we're doing it for the women's own good. They can't really regulate themselves. We need to show them the proper attire and the proper manifestation of their body and things like that. So I think that, you know, men were really never subjected to those kind of social rules in the way that women have been. Men's dress has standardized and, you know, with the suit in the 1800s and really hasn't changed much in terms of how much skin they show. Of course, now we have shorts and tank tops, depending on where you live. But I do think that women have been at the coalface of social regulation, and they're just two different games, men and women's social regulation of clothing.
You mentioned the bikini being introduced and popularized in France, but that was France. How about the rest of the world? How long did it take for bikinis to kind of enter the global mainstream?
First of all, when you talk about Europe, right, you have to talk about the role of the Catholic Church in regulating the swimsuit. It was illegal to wear it on beaches in Italy, in Spain, and a lot of places where the Catholic Church had some power that said women are not allowed to show their body in this way. So it had a rocky start, really. And by the time it sort of shook off those in Europe, it had taken quite a good hold in the United States, in California, which we see as a major player in the fashion scene in the second half of the 20th century. You know, California fashion really dominated American fashion starting around 1950. And they were quite expensive. Once swimsuit companies were able to sort of mass produce them and get women to wear them, particularly in California, then women around the country wanted to wear them. First couple years of the 60s, mid-1960s, you American women really take this French creation to the next level. And of course, the influence of Hollywood can never be underrated when you talk about clothing history.
All of the beach blanket bingo movies?
You got it.
So the bikini kind of became the standard, although some women were arrested for wearing too little on the beaches in Italy and Spain, and now being arrested on the beaches of the Riviera for wearing too much. So is this progress? Do you see parallels? What's going on here?
Well, I think, you know, as so many people can really understand the motivations behind the French government to regulate these very loaded garments. You know, French still, invented democracy. So I think a lot of people around the world were really taken back by this official regulation of this attire. And I was quite surprised that there wasn't more of an outcry from sort of the feminist community, meaning, you know, clothing, I talk about this in my classes, I talk about it in my writing. You know, clothing is really constitutive of personal identity. You know, we like to think, oh, clothing reflects cultural change. And I always tell my students, no, clothing is how we live out cultural change. It's not like, ooh, I'm going to become a beach blanket bingo babe and I'm going to buy myself a bunch of bikinis. It's in wearing the bikini that you become the beach blanket bingo babe, right? So it constitutes our identity, and I think one of the big problems with, you know, in my own personal opinion, is with this regulation in France, is that it took that power away from women to decide what was best for them, and in a country that sort of, you know, spouts such high standards of democracy as France, it was shocking. But again, you know, certainly anybody who's seen the horrific attacks over there can certainly understand their motivation. So it's complicated. And that's, I think, why it has caused such a stir in the media around the world.
We're talking about regulating women's fashion, specifically laws about what women wear on the beach, not just in France, where the burkini has been banned in some 30 towns, but also here in the United States with Deirdre Clemente, historian from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. So you're talking about what is communicated, what is signaled, and identity that's taken on when wearing swimsuits or other kind of clothing. But does other women's clothing have a more contentious history than swimwear?
Well, I think as a general category, swimwear really does ignite a lot of fears and concern for women blatantly showing skin. But there's been a lot of contentious garments in the past century, particularly in the United States. And I mean, for example, jeans, women in jeans. When these young women started wearing jeans in the late 30s, and then of course through World War II, the outcry was so loud. I just am so shocked that they continued to wear them. The men hated them. Their boyfriends used to say, anything is better than jeans, right? I have all these quotes of these people despising women in jeans. Their mothers would say, if you just knew how cute you looked in a dress and this and that. So, I mean, particular garments have met with a lot of contention, jeans and shorts being two of the big ones. And, of course, shorts would be in a similar vein as swimsuits because it does show a part of the body that we hid for so many years. And all you have to do is think about what were women wearing in 1850 and look what they were wearing in 1950. And you can, of course, understand why historians such as myself have careers, because that's a really big change. And what were the causes behind those changes? And those are the kind of things that I study.
But that's leisure wear. In this same period, or in the latter part of that period, women have joined the workforce in increasing numbers. How about the sort of dress code for work?
The interesting thing about dress codes is that you really don't see them written down until the lines got fuzzy. It was just assumed that anyone who was going to work at an office in 1925 knew what to wear, knew what was appropriate for work, and knew what was inappropriate for work. So when you start to see the lines get fuzzy in that sort of post-war period where women, you know, the hemlines start to get short again, you know, after, of course, a brief longness in the late 1940s, but you see this increasingly short hemline, you see women abandoning things, garments of modesty such as hats, stockings or tights or pantyhose, those kinds of things. And that's really when you start to see corporations and businesses write down what is appropriate attire for women. And, you know, what's amazing about dress codes is while they wrote them down for women, they maybe would give a sentence or two or a paragraph or two about men, but the women were very, very specific, had very, very specific standards. And this was really codified by the groups of women, and women would police each other. And it's interesting that as much as we like, oh, this is men telling women what to wear, it's women telling women what to wear. Hmm. Men telling them, the boss, the whoever. I mean, it's an interesting how dress standards get codified. It's a really interesting point of inquiry.
Well, you've got a lot of material there, Deirdre. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
You got it.
Deirdre Clemente, she's history professor at the University of Nevada with a focus on 20th century American culture, fashion, and clothing. You'll find a link to read more on her work at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.